A top UN official says cryptocurrencies have made efforts to fight cybercrime, terror financing and money laundering much harder by adding a new layer of secrecy that favours the criminals. And that includes global child sexual exploitation networks. Neil Walsh is the chief of the cybercrime and anti-money laundering section of the UN's Office on Drugs and Crime. He's visiting Australia, which provides significant funding for his team's work, supporting and training police and judges around the world and sensitising the public to new threats. When he joined me from Canberra, I asked him first about cryptocurrency.
It's what makes it really hard for cops, investigators to manage some really big risks. Because in the past, when we looked at some of those really big high threat areas like kids getting abused online, it had to be paid for. And now with the use of cryptocurrencies, it's exceptionally difficult for investigators to track that and to try and manage that risk down.
So it's added a whole new layer to the existing nightmares that you're dealing with.
Perfect. Yeah, you've gone from something that used to be any criminality, you're trying to do it for profit, right? So everybody wants to make some money. That's what's going on. When you add a layer that is encrypted, that is anonymous or pseudo-anonymous, then it makes it very difficult for investigators to counter that challenge. And also it really makes it easier for the bad guys to do what they do. And that creates risks, especially for our children.
Now, there have been attempts recently at setting some global rules, non-binding rules that might break up some of that secrecy in some circumstances. What effect do you think that might have?
So we're still waiting to see how that plays out. There is a global regulator, if you will, who sets these rules called the Financial Action Task Force. They've come out with some recommendations, but very much thanks actually to good people of Australia that helped to fund the work that my staff and I do. We've brought together those policymakers, lawyers, those cryptocurrency experts to try and look what policy might look like in this space, because when we look at some of the really high-risk crime where we see kids, and I'm talking babies, very, very young, 6 months old and younger, who are in pay-per-view live online child sexual abuse streaming websites, and that's getting paid for by cryptocurrencies, we need to have some sort of options. We need to know how we try and challenge that threat and reduce the risks for kids and reduce the opportunities for criminals to get involved. And it's going to take lots of different brains. It's going to take technologists, policymakers, philosophers, the whole nine yards.
But what are the incentives for the operators of cryptocurrency to abandon secrecy, even in some circumstances, if not all? I mean, the business model is secrecy.
Yeah, you're right. And I think the way to look at this is if you or I go into a bank today or we want to exchange, I was coming to Australia yesterday and I go to get some Australian dollars in the airport. I've got to show ID to get that so that we know who's got cash and who's moving amounts of value across the border. When you try to apply that business model to cryptocurrencies, it's much, much harder because it's designed, as you say, to try and be anonymous or pseudo-anonymous in the first place. And it seems to us that the place to do that and to try and put some investigative capability or due diligence in check is with those people that we call exchanges, kind of like a foreign exchange, but those where you can go and buy cryptocurrency or change a Bitcoin into a different type of cryptocurrency. And then you know who it is and who's moving that value, because there isn't really a large amount of risk around declaring who you are and that you have an interest in moving value. And we have to be doing this to keep the most vulnerable in our society safe.
So you've got this layer at the same time as you're dealing with matters like, for example, as we saw in a recent leaked UN report, North Korea having made a cool $2 billion from some 35 cyber attacks so it can fund its weapons of mass destruction. You've got terror groups, Al-Qaeda, Islamic State, obviously, you know, working in these, you know, kind of criminal ways in the cyberspace. What's the key to doing better to stopping these things? Because obviously national police forces, for example, stop at the borders. I mean, how do you make this work?
So big, big business areas that you're talking about there, everything from nuclear proliferation to terrorism to organised crime. Like I said earlier, all of this is done for profit. I was a cop for 15 years before joining the UN. And it's when you take that profit out of criminality and the ability to stop that flow of profit, you really have an impact on the bad guys that are doing it. So I think that's when we all turn it on its head, is we want to have a safe world where everybody can get economic prosperity, where we can be safe going about our day-to-day lives. And I think it's allowing security to be in place where it ought to be, challenging that where it creates risk, especially for the most vulnerable parts of our society. But I think it's the hardest thing now, Linda, is when you see things like cryptocurrencies developing, that for our policymakers to understand that and how it impacts on day-to-day life can be pretty challenging. And that's where people like my staff come into. That I've got 70-odd staff around the world. We help cops and prosecutors and judges to develop the capability to investigate this sort of stuff with the ultimate aim of keeping kids safe.
Yeah, and look, just to focus on that child exploitation issue a little more, it is the most depraved and cruel stuff that we're talking about. I mean, how do you expect to counter that, given that on the one hand, you're looking at trying to stop these activities via, if you like, technological policing means, but really you're dealing with humans who tend to this behaviour. I mean, do you see a chance of really stopping it?
So I think we have to accept that the scale of online child sexual abuse is much bigger than most people would realise, and even having a true sense of that scale is difficult. Australia is one of the leaders in this field in countering it. In fact, today, Queensland Police are wrapping up their annual Youth Technology and Virtual Communities Conference, which brings together some of the most well thought through investigators and policymakers in countering child abuse. When you get that scale in place, you can help cops to do their job better. But like anything, when it's with policing, it's already too late. You've got to be able to prevent it. And a lot of the work that we do now, certainly within the UN Office on Drugs and Crime, is on the prevention side. So we get in front of kids, hundreds of thousands of kids per year, in school, in social clubs, in faith-based communities, to explain what online risk is like. And I mean, I've got four kids. They're 9, 7, 5, and 2. And the way that I try and keep them safe is that we talk about things openly and honestly in a way that's not scary for them. But the way that we see working is that children understand their own bodies, what adults are allowed to do, what they're not allowed to do, and to make them feel empowered about managing their own lives, their own bodies, and how to seek help if something happens. Child abusers are successful when they can create secrecy, when things become a risk to a child, saying if you tell someone you're going to get in trouble, no one will believe you. So we need to get rid of that, that our children always have someone that they can go to for help. It mightn't be mum or dad, it mightn't be a relative, but by having those conversations, creating that safe space, then we can get into the prevention bit much, much better.
And can I ask you a couple of other sort of more, I guess, retail questions in a sense? And I don't know, you know, how much this is in your realm, but here in Australia, there's been considerable interest recently in casinos and alleged or potential money laundering. What's your understanding of whether Australia is a problematic country in terms of that globalised sort of criminal gambling, if you like?
So I'll be honest, my knowledge of Australia and the casino scene is zero, but in my previous life as an investigator, and I was based at an organisation called Europol, which is the EU's law enforcement agency, and it has Australian liaison at it as well, we saw lots of opportunities for the organised laundering of the proceeds of crime. So there are organised crime groups who specialise in moving money, and things like casinos are a way of doing that, because you have a large throughput of cash. You have casinos now that will accept cryptocurrencies or accept gold or any other commodity. And all of this is about looking at how do we allow people to go about their days in a normal day-to-day life, but managing some of that risk around that? If you start to see casinos popping up in places that don't make sense, or where you have a casino arriving in a country where perhaps, I don't know, you don't have an enormous amount of tourism or that regular activity, then I think that's probably pause for thought for policymakers as to why that's happening and to look a little bit deeper into it.
And what do you think when you see all the personal information that people share online? And I guess children, you know, are in that realm, aren't they? Very much. How much are we adding to the burden of risk? And should we stop living online?
I really couldn't phrase that any more perfectly than you've done, Linda, because the amount of detail that people put online is phenomenal now. And we have to, let's say I speak to someone who says, well, I've got nothing to hide. I've got nothing to hide by it being out there. Then actually those are perfect targets for cyber criminals. That if you don't look after your passwords, you don't keep things up to date, you don't update your software, you're the ideal person for a cyber criminal to target and to try and replicate you or your account or your login details. And that just creates methods for them committing their criminality. And we have to, I think, we have to get into a better space where we don't emulate success by the number of views or likes that exist on a certain platform. And we also have to help, again, but not just kids, but adults as well, with better critical thinking. Just because you have an account followed by 100 million followers with 500 million likes on something doesn't make it true. We have to keep asking ourselves and critically thinking our way through what we see online and being able to make a judgment at the end of that and not be afraid to ask questions and not be afraid to challenge what's out there in social media. 20 years ago, the most sellable commodity was probably oil. Now it's personal data.
The big companies behind the popular platforms, though, have a lot to answer for, don't they?
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. They do have a lot to answer for. They have to get much more involved in this space because I think we've gone past the part of saying, well, we're simply providing a platform. It's up to the people who are on it. Mm. If you have a service, whatever your service is, and you've got a certain percentage of the world using it on a daily basis, you have to be part of that solution. Tech is part of the problem, but it can be part of the solution. We've seen that work exceptionally well in countering child sexual abuse by getting those big platforms on board. But I think now as society grows and technology grows and changes, you've got many more companies need to get involved in operating in this space that we all recognise the threat and we see where the tech companies can bring a real part to that policy making and that solution. The solution is not with policing or government. It will be the tech companies that are a major part of it.
And so they are cooperating with you and your office and the work you do in that area of child exploitation and beyond that?
Yeah, certainly on the child sexual abuse side, we have a very good cooperation with the big tech companies, and we've had some real success with that. Where I can think back a couple of years, we were delivering some training to police and judges in a Central American country, and that led to a predatory paedophile being identified and brought to justice. And he had raped over 35 children in his community and was violating over 50 others around the world. The work that we do now with Australian counterparts in Southeast Asia and the Pacific has brought some really high-risk individuals to justice. We've brought governments and cops together around this part of the world to help make better policy and stop our kids being abused online. Are we on top of it? No. But are we in the right direction? Yes, I think we are.
And do you see the possibility of a sort of peak moment for cybercrime, whatever form it takes, the possibility that we'll conquer it a little bit like technology as crimped car theft, for example?
Of all the questions I've had in the past, I've never had that one before. That's a great question. Is there a peak moment? I think it's exceptionally difficult to predict because the technology moves at such a pace where the ability of tech to move forward for mass amounts of data to move forward. We see cyber criminals changing their methodology, how they do things on a yearly basis, on a monthly basis. And previously, they might be looking at trying to intercept data in transmission. But now it is more profitable for them if they can get into the supply chain of equipment or software, because that way you're not having to intercept stuff or decrypt it. You're already in the background when things are made. So if you're a cyber criminal trying to work out where that profitability is going to come from, how the whole dynamic's going to change, then I think they're very, very responsive to that. And the challenge for us in government, in the UN, in policing, is to try and keep up with that. But it's the sort of work that people like you do that helping get this out to the public, that we all play a part in keeping ourselves safe, has never been more important.
Neil Walsh, thank you so much for speaking with PM.
Thanks, Linda.
The UN's Chief of the Cybercrime and Anti-Money Laundering Section, Neil Walsh. And we also discussed the risks of living your life online, among other things. You can hear more of that at the PM webpage.